Part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and coffee bar. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Illinois State Geological Survey's Centennial Lecture Series. The survey presents a public lecture at 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 13th, in the Lincoln Hall Theater, 802 South Wright Street on the U of I campus. Harrison Schmidt, the only geologist ever to walk on the moon, will present A Trip to the Moon and Beyond.
I'm Lisa Mullins. Reporters for PRI's The World help you understand America's role in every region of the globe. Our correspondents in the Middle East, Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Americas cover big picture stories about war, politics, business, and culture. And we bring you personal stories about people affected by events in the news. We help you understand your world on PRI's The World.
Today at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. here on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. You'll also find us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. There's a whole lot of talking going on, but are we listening and are we being heard? On the program today, a conversation about communicating with one another. Psychologists Paul Donahue and Mary Siegel are our guests. They are the authors of Are You Really Listening? Keys to Successful Communication. The book is intended to help all of us, men, women, spouses, parents, older children, siblings, employees, employers, professionals, and clients. The authors have taken a careful look at where we stumble in our interactions with one another and what we can do to be better listeners and ensure that when we have something to say, we'll be heard. Listeners, I invite you to join the conversation with your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guests. Paul Donahue and Mary Siegel are psychologists in private practice in Stamford, Connecticut. In addition to Are You Really Listening?, Dr. Siegel and Donahue are the authors of Sick and Tired of Feeling Sick and Tired. Are You Listening? Is published by Sorin Books. Again, the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Dr. Donahue, Dr. Siegel, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste. Pleasure to be here.
You begin your book with an examination of the importance of listening. And one of the things you say in the first chapter, in this first chapter, is listening, quote, speaks volumes. What would you like to say here at the outset about the importance of listening and the gift of being heard?
Well, I think, first of all, that when someone is really, really heard, it says, and this is what we mean by volumes, it says, I'm giving you my full attention. You are the only one that's important to me right now. Everything you're saying really has meaning to me. Well, I think that's an incredible gift to another human being, and it's one that we can all give. It isn't one that's just special to professionals. It's one every single person can give to another. So that if I really listen to you, what I'm saying in that moment is, I prize what you're saying. I give real value to you. It's what we all want.
Yeah, and it shows respect.
It definitely shows respect, and we think that we are showing respect to another person just kind of unconsciously. They should kind of presume that we respect them. But yet many of the ways that we respond to people shows disrespect, and not paying attention to them is one of the worst forms of disrespect for another person. It discounts them. And we don't even know we're doing it. A child can be talking to us, and we're making uh-huh sounds. But we're not showing respect for the child by stopping what we're doing and listening. If the child's talking about school or a movie they've seen or something that happened with a friend, if we're not ready to listen, say, honey, I'm not ready to listen, but I want to hear all about that. Let me finish this first. Then turn our attention and show that respect. Otherwise, we're showing disrespect.
Mm. In general, can you generalize and say how good we are, how bad we are as listeners?
Do you know, one of the, when the book first came out, or we got the cover, I showed the cover to a number of people, and almost every single person said, oh, I could be better at that. I think every person would like to be known as a good listener, would like to provide good listening, but because of human nature, I think in general, most of us don't. That when we hear someone having a problem, we want to give them advice. When we hear someone doing something that we've done before, we want to say, me too. Or if someone says something to us that they're angry about, we want to defend. And all of those are non-listening behaviors.
Mm.
You can't really listen to someone if you're busy defending, telling your own story, giving advice. You're off onto your own business.
Mm. One of the things that I do is I have a tendency to fill up the silence. And maybe that's because of my job.
A lot of us are uncomfortable with silence.
Yeah.
And so in that discomfort, we have to say something. So we start to talk. Where if we can learn, we all of us have to learn, what do we do that keeps us from really listening? And just as you, Celeste, are identifying that you have to be careful of not breaking into that silence out of awkwardness or whatever, each of us has to learn, what do I do? Do I defend a lot? Am I thinking about what I want to say when the other person's talking? Am I a great caregiver? I jump in with care. A lot of men jump in with solutions and they think they're hearing a problem and they have to have an answer to it. But if we don't know what we're doing other than listening, we'll never really learn to listen.
Hmm. Or sometimes we might, in an effort to identify with the other, we'll jump in with something of a me too kind of response.
That's right. And in this sense, that is, at the start of it, good listening, because if you're saying me too, it means you did hear what the other person was saying. But the danger of it is that once you start realizing, oh, me too, I got nervous when I was going into my first year at college, the danger is you would keep on going with that story saying, and the reason I got nervous was because my parents really didn't, and then next thing you know, you're telling your story. The challenge in that is to recognize, oh, I do know that feeling of being nervous when you first go to college, but then bring it back to the person and invite them to talk more about, why were you nervous? Was it nervous because your ex-boyfriend was in the class, or were you nervous because you've never had a male professor, or it could be one of a thousand reasons, but me too assumes I know exactly what you're talking about, and now I'm going to tell my story.
Hmm.
And then that moves far away from listening.
Yeah.
A lot of times, too, I think we do that me too as a form of comfort. Like if a child is saying that, I don't think my teacher likes me, instead of really hearing what that unique experience of our child is, we think we have to comfort the child by saying, oh, I felt that way too. I had a teacher that I didn't think liked me. So often it's a little bit inauthentic way of showing comfort. We even make up that we felt the same way to give comfort. But that brings about a kind of distrust eventually within the other person.
Mm. Two related questions here. How good are we at listening to ourselves? Do we hear what we're saying or not saying?
Well, actually, that's a very important question, because I think to really listen to another person and to do that well and to do it consistently, you have to know what's going on inside yourself. You have to know if let's say your husband came to you and said, I'm just so angry that you didn't have the car there when you said you would. And inside, if you know I'm feeling defensive or I feel resentful, if you know that, you can put it aside and then hear why he was so frustrated. But if you don't know that, the tendency for all of us would be to just act out of it. So instead of stopping and saying, well, I know inside your head, I know I feel defensive and I know I feel resentful, but I'm going to choose now to listen to him, then it's all choice. And then there's really a moment where you can pause, put that aside. But if you really don't know what's going on inside you, it's very hard to listen to someone. You'd be too victim to your own bad non-listening habits.
Yeah. And that's why I suppose near the end of the book you take up the importance of paying attention to our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that point that you're making, Celeste, about listening to ourselves first is really the essential step. If we're not really listening to our own emotion of sadness and what that feels like, or our own emotion of fear, or anger, or loneliness, or embarrassment, we won't admit and listen to our own feelings. How can we possibly understand those feelings in the people that matter to us?
Mm.
We wouldn't be acquainted with that emotion because we won't admit it within ourselves.
And when we're really listening to someone, what we're doing is that kind of classic idea of being in somebody else's shoes. Well, I can't get into someone else's shoes if I've never known the feeling of frustration, or I've never known the feeling of envy or loneliness or despair. More I know those feelings in myself and really what they felt like, then I can hear them in another person. I can get into their shoes and think, oh, that's right, I know what it felt like to feel envy. And then if I can stop myself from chastising that person or trying to get them off of envy, if I just then get into their shoes, then I really know what they're talking about.
I think one other point in that too, Celeste, is that we're very often afraid of emotions within other people. We don't want to get near their grief or their loneliness or their depression. It's scary to us. So the more that we've become comfortable with our own feelings of sorrow or loneliness, we can become less afraid of entering, really hearing those feelings within others.
Mm.
And it's fearing those feelings within others that keeps us a little bit distant from the other person. It's much easier for me to hear a little bit of that grief and then start giving you advice and comfort than it is for really entering into and hearing what that particular grief is like for you.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and on the program today we're talking about the importance of listening and the importance of being heard. Our guests are psychologists Paul Donahue and Mary Siegel. They're the authors of Are You Really Listening? Keys to Successful Communication. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. You can join the discussion with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener calling in from Aurora on line 4. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. I just got off a plane yesterday and my ears haven't cleared out. Could you speak a little louder when you speak to me, please?
Certainly.
I have a sister that's grieving for a daughter that she lost 3 years ago on October 1st. And she wants everybody to call her up on October 1st. So, of course, that makes a big problem. I don't know how to handle this. I do think that my sister needs to go to a grieving group or you know, to a group to discuss and be with other people that are in her same problem. I don't know what to write to her, but I feel I must.
What is your name?
What?
What is your name?
What?
He is asking, the caller, he's asking you for your first name. And let me say here that generally on the program, we don't ask people their names.
That's
right. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, that's why I wondered why you were asking.
Oh,
me.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me just, can I make a suggestion to it? Sounds like you are kind of reluctant to talk to your sister because you're not sure what to say to her. And
yeah,
you think maybe people
I feel
in her support
I must say
group
something, but
would
I am
know
reluctant
how to speak to her better than you.
What?
Right?
Dr. Donahue asked you if there might be someone else who could help you talk with her.
Oh, is that a good suggestion? I don't know who would take it on in the family, though.
Well,
and I can't go through this anymore. I know she lost her daughter. One of the biggest problems is they did not have a good relationship. It was a terrible relationship. And I think that's what makes the problem.
Right. I think the important thing, though, what we're suggesting, and it might be very difficult for you to do, but is to let her talk about how sad she feels, how lonely, how guilty, and not do anything other than listen to her guilt and her sadness. It's when you think you have to have an answer for her that I think it can keep you from just listening. What she needs is to be heard.
But you know, I'll tell you, I have listened for 50 years, 40 or 50 years, and I can't do it anymore. I just can't. She lost the daughter 3 years ago, and I've listened to her about other losses in her life, and I can't do it. I think she should go to a group.
Well, you know, I think that is a very honest place that a lot of people have to get to. First, we do have to try and listen as much as we can, but there are times in life, if we've really tried, and it sounds like you have, that we have to say, I can't do it anymore. And then the next step is just what Dr. Donahue was saying. Then I have to find a way, even if I invite someone in to help me, to tell her this truth, that I can't do it anymore. And that's when I think, I mean, that's painful, and that can be very difficult. But that is honest, and it's real, and where connection occurs.
And so, I just returned from the hospital, Mercy Provena, and I asked if I could speak to a priest, or could I speak to a grieving group or somebody that does grieving listening, and they had nobody that I could turn to there.
Well, you were on the right track. I mean, you sound very good to me. You're on the right track of a grieving group where where they can all share together, and your sister would learn something in that, and trying for a priest or a minister, someone who's much more skilled in dealing with someone who can't let go. So I think you're on the right track.
So would you just please say 1, 2, and 3 things that I could do, and I'll quickly make notes?
Okay. One would be, trust yourself. If you have listened, then it's time to say, I can't do it anymore. 2, I would get the information about grieving groups and then see if there is a priest that could help.
No, she's against religion now.
Oh, well, then I would go with the grieving group. So 2, I would tell her about it. And 3, I would stop. I wouldn't listen anymore. I mean, that's very hard, but you're saying, I honestly can't do it anymore.
No, I can't.
Right.
You don't know what I've been through. I've been through horrendous things.
Mm.
I've even taken her to a therapist when I was going to help her. She wouldn't do anything he said for her to do. That was about 15 years ago.
Well, you're a good sister, and I think you're pointing to some of the parts that make listening so difficult. We can feel like, oh, my God, I have listened and listened, and I've tried everything.
Yes,
and then
I have.
Then at some point you have to say, I'm not doing it anymore.
Is there a book?
Yes.
Are
you
really
listening?
I hope you get our book. I think that would really help.
Okay, well, give me the name of it.
Are You Really Listening?
Now, who is that for, a grieving person or somebody like me?
I think it's for someone like you, to know.
I know how to give the empathic response when necessary. I've taken a lot of behavior courses. I've gone to therapy. I think I know when to say something and when to not. In this case, I know I can't say anything.
Right, and I think it would help you to know how to say that to her and move on yourself. Otherwise, you end up helpless.
The last part of the book would help you to be honest with your own limitations and to state those without blame of your sister, but to state them honestly, your own limits. The book could help you to do that.
And what is the title?
Are You Really
Listening?
Okay. See, I wasn't, was I?
Well, you had that episode on the airplane where your ears got clogged up. So.
Yeah, well, I really thank you. You don't know how I've been deliberating about this since October 1st, and it's October 11th today.
Well, we're glad you called.
Glad you called.
Bye-bye.
Take care. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Mary Siegel and Paul Donahue. They're psychologists. They are the authors of the book, Are You Really Listening? Keys to Successful Communication. The book is published by Soren Books of Notre Dame, Indiana. And you can find them on the web, www.sorinbooks.com. What is it in terms of, so often I think when we're in pain, we stop communicating. We give up trying to communicate. We won't talk. And that often is the result of not being heard. If someone can't stop talking, though.
Right. I think the point, though, is a very, very touching one, that at the moment when we most need to be understood and most need to share the feelings of grief or hurt or loneliness or anger or shame that are going on within us, we so often are so vulnerable to the being not heard by others. We give an example in the book of a woman who lost her child. She was carrying twins, and she lost one, and then finally lost the other. And this had been after years of working to become pregnant. Her grief was so profound, but she got so many bits of advice and nosegays and kind of meaningless comments back about, oh, you'll get pregnant again, or you must thank God that you still are healthy yourself, or some kind of remark that so hurt her or frustrated her or didn't meet her need that she began to not talk to anyone about this, and then that led to some real depression. So it is very important that we find the right person who will listen to us and keep looking for that person, even if the persons around us won't really listen to us. We still need to be heard.
Mm. There's also an anecdote in the book about a little girl who is afraid of her feelings and afraid of expressing them. This is an 8-year-old girl whose name is Keisha and whose parents have divorced.
Mm. I think for little children, we can think that they don't really have to be listened to deeply. And little kids are so capable, even kind of purely able to put out what they're feeling. The tendency is for others to say to children those kinds of things that Paul is just talking about for someone who's in grieving, is to say, no, you'll be okay. Don't worry about the boogeyman. You'll be safe. To, in some ways, sort of try to talk them out of their feelings. And we really need to, if we really want to understand what's going on in their little minds, we really do need to listen. I went to see that movie, March of the Penguins, and right behind me as we were leaving, I heard a mother say to a little girl who was about 8, so what did you think of the movie? And the little girl said, I don't know, Mommy, it was kind of sad. And the mother, without stopping to listen at all to what was that sadness about, you know, did it upset her, said to the little girl, you know, you have to learn these things. Nature can be brutal. Now, in some way, I'm sure the mother didn't want her child to be upset, didn't want her to be sad. She wasn't listening to herself like you were saying before, Celeste. Instead, she was probably scared at hearing her daughter sad, maybe feeling guilty that she brought her daughter to the movie. And so then she immediately shut down the little girl. And the little girl didn't say another word. They just walked out of the theater silent.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
How important are prompts in listening? In other words, maybe Mom should have said, why did it make you sad?
Well, exactly, because a prompt like that, what it says is, I want to hear more. Her original question, so what did you think, sounded like she wanted to hear. But as she had followed up what the daughter said with, well, what made you sad? Then the little girl would be getting the message from her mother of, I want to hear more. So I think prompts are important, as long as they don't get into sort of a series of questions that can sound like someone's beginning to write a book or write an article. But if it sounds more like, I do want to know, what were you scared of, or what made you so angry, or what was so exciting?
You know, I think the point there of giving a prompt points to the whole question of how do we really listen to someone? How do we encourage someone to say what's really going on with them, and how do we let them know that we're understanding? Sometimes it's as simple as a waitress saying back, do I have your order correct? You want tuna on white toast and no mayonnaise and so forth. Even that type of playing back exactly what you've heard will take away a lot of confusion and a lot of mistakes that come from not really listening. Then it's going all the way to being able to hear the emotions within someone and letting them know we're hearing them. Frequently, I will say to a client in my office, all right, I'll say something to you. You let me know that you understand. And even with a direct invitation to let me know they understand, they don't know how to do it. So we have to learn how to offer back to the other person what we're hearing, but in our own words, so they get a sense, boy, you really are hearing me. And that prompt could be something like, it sounds like you're feeling hurt that this happened. It sounds like. Or, well, what I'm hearing in that is this. But we do need to learn those prompts that encourage the other person to speak and give the other person a sense they really are being understood.
I think also that listening does mean you have to be quiet when someone's talking. So, and I think people can get that part. You know, okay, I'm going to be quiet. You're going to talk. I'm going to listen. But then it also is an active process. It's not a passive process. So then I have to, once someone talks, and I think I've heard them, I have to let them know back what they've said. So it's a very active exchange. It's not just one person talking, the other person just sitting quietly until it's his or her turn. It's letting the person know, I really did understand you. I think I did, and I'm going to try, and I'm going to try and show you now. And that, we do believe, is a skill. I think we can all learn that, and it's part of why we wrote the book, is that we really can, because most of us want to, learn the skill of listening. We can get very good at it.
Yeah, and that's what goes into what you call pure attention.
Mm.
Yes, and thank you for bringing up that concept, Celeste, because that is key to us, that the best definition of love that we've heard is pure attention to the being of the other person. Giving that pure attention means I'm going to put aside my own selfishness, my own agenda, even my own opinions for the moment, and really put myself aside and pay total, pure attention to you. Not an attention that tries to get you somewhere or tries to convince you of something, but attention that's the kind of attention we give to a sunset where we just enjoy it and experience it. That's how we can listen to another, really enjoy and experience that other person, not be trying to change them or get them somewhere.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Eureka on line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Excellent program. My question is, what do your guests think of someone like Carl Rogers, who seemed to emphasize listening, but maybe had a few different emphases?
Well, I had the pleasure of working with Carl Rogers in California too many years ago to admit, two wonderful summers. And first of all, Carl really did give that pure attention. He came from a background that was very analytic, where you were trained as the psychiatrist or the psychologist to sit back and take in all the data and make a diagnosis, a judgment of the patient. He found that to become pretty dissatisfying. And instead of his sitting back, analyzing and watching, he learned how to really listen and let the person express themselves. And the more that he would listen, the more he would learn about the other. So he learned by listening rather than by analyzing.
I think also Rogers was saying that he believed that we all have this capacity for self-actualizing, and that if someone, meaning becoming all of who they are, to be all that you can be, and if someone really listens to you, and allows you to put out everything about yourself without any danger of being damned or judged or advised away, then you could hear yourself. Someone else says what I hear, and then you hear, and then you clarify more, and bit by bit you're moving more and more into what you really mean and what you really want to say and what you really want to stand for. So I think what we're saying is very much in line with Carl Rogers.
Could I ask one more question, please?
Sure.
I think you're absolutely right that the tendency, and I believe this is maybe more of a male tendency in the female, is to try to give advice. And I realize we males want to, I think as many people know, we want to fix the problem. Could you give some suggestions for how one may fight that tendency and recognize that maybe real listening is a more effective way in helping the person than just trying to give them what you think they ought to do? Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you one, and then I'll let the other male answer more to that. But one is, I find that people who jump in too fast to solve a problem haven't really found out what the problem is. So if you want to be a really good problem solver, besides a really good listener, the first thing to do is to take the time to make sure, even if you're saying, let me make sure I tell you exactly what I hear is the problem, 99% of the time you won't be right the first time. That the tendency is just to hear a bit and then start running with the advice.
Just on that point of not taking the time to really find out more, a study done that we talk about in the book at the University of Rochester on doctors' interactions with patients show that a doctor, in general, interrupts the patient after the first 18 seconds that the patient started talking. The doctor then really is dealing with symptom number one that the patient has begun to talk about, whereas the study revealed that the patient really doesn't get to the major point he or she's trying to make until they get to the third symptom. So that interrupting keeps from really understanding the person or the problem. An example I read today in the New York Times, a study that had been done on, again, doctor interactions, especially doctor interactions over the telephone. And the danger of them is the doctor's not even seeing the visual clues, and gave an example of a person calling the doctor in the middle of the night to talk about a pain going on in his back. The doctor impatiently and with annoyance told the patient he should not be calling in the middle of the night for a pain in his back and hung up. He found out the next day what the patient didn't get to was he also had awful chest pains and that night had a heart attack. It's just that our male quickness and impatience, and I have to fight that impatience within myself, to be quiet inside and let the person reveal more, and then say, maybe the best thing I can do for you is not see you as a problem that I've got to solve, but see you as a person that I've got to learn to understand.
Hmm. That urge to solve, to what extent also might it come from our rush, our rushing, and, you know, time is not always on our side, and you want to deal with something.
I think that's an excellent point, Celeste, and I think that's what doctors really suffer from also. They've got patients out in the waiting area. They've got to move quickly. Insurance policies have made that even more of a problem. And then we do move fast in life, and so we quick. What's the problem? What's the problem?
I think that's really true. And then I think a lot of non-listening behaviors, like problem solving, come out of love. You know, that's a kind of almost a comical thing you hear in marriages of whatever I say to him, he's got an answer. He's going to fix it. But it's not because the husband just wants to be Mr. Fix-It. It often is because he wants to help her or take care of her or love her. And that's why I think, in part, non-listening behaviors are hard to stop, because they do come from good places, you know, wanting to say me too because we want the other person to think, oh, you're not the only one who messed up there. So it's trying to curb love or love in that form that we're encouraging also.
Mm. Also, another block that you write about in the book is emotion, intense emotion.
Mm.
And it's so sad because, you know, when we feel intense emotion, it seems we really need to communicate at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with the emotion you or another person or both of you are feeling at the moment?
Well, you're so right. That's the really kind of poignant part of listening, is that the moment we need it most, when people are suffering intense emotion, for instance, I think in families, when there's a death of a child, let's say, both parents or partners are suffering deeply. And when those emotions are running high, they both desperately need to be heard. And yet, it's the hardest time of all to listen. And there are times, I think, when we have to say, I can't do it. Like the first caller has to say, I can't listen anymore to my sister. Or maybe a parent in this case has to say, I can't be the one to listen to my spouse. I'm too broken up myself. And then be honest about it.
I think the point that you made before, Celeste, of with that intense emotion, there can be a real tendency to isolate, to pull back within ourselves. The pain's too intense. We're too vulnerable in it. We're too afraid of being misunderstood or judged. And yet we do so need to be heard by another who doesn't rush, who doesn't try to solve it all, who doesn't have all the answers, but who will give me room to say what's going on within me. I had such a hard time finding someone like that when my mother died. I think people saw me as so self-sufficient. He's very confident, takes care of himself, whatever, that when I would start to say my sadness, they would jump in with all kinds of what a wonderful son I must have been to my mother and da-da-da-da, and wouldn't let me share the grief that I felt. Took some time to find someone who would just really hear me.
Hmm. And how did that feel?
Well, it's lovely of you to ask. It was horrible. It was such a sense of tension within my body that I needed the release. I needed to cry. I needed to let out what was going on inside me. But to do that, I needed to be in the presence of someone who wouldn't be judging me as either self-sufficient or as too emotional. I needed someone who wouldn't judge, who would just listen. And when I found that, the release of that took tension out of my shoulders. I'd been starting to become irritable and edgy because I wasn't able to release this emotion. Listening is a great healer. Very often people come into our office thinking that we're going to have someone like Dr. Siegel or myself answers to their problems. What we mainly do is really hear them, really listen, helping them to clarify what's really going on within them. And they'll walk out saying, oh, that was so helpful. And yet what we've mainly done is listen.
Mm-hmm. There's a story near the end of the book about a lawyer who's advised to just keep a little journal at different points in the day about how are you feeling. And he was out of touch with himself. And he wondered to himself, do I have any feelings?
Mm. And I've actually had people say that to me. Oh, I don't
know how I feel.
Right. Or I don't actually have any feelings. And that's impossible. We have feelings all the time, all day, every day. And it actually does take effort because I think, you know, there's probably nothing that you're going through that you don't have feelings, but we can get so used to, back to that idea that we're busy, or so used to squelching them, or so used to not talking about them and trusting that someone will pay attention, that we just sort of let them pass through our head and they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go by the premise that it's impossible for a human not to have feelings, that that's part of being a human being, then we can start to learn that skill. And that's the idea behind that lawyer sitting down several times a day and just writing. We encourage everyone to do that. Just write a list of feelings. And then next, write, what was the feeling connected to? If you felt delight, was that because you saw a beautiful baby? Or was it because you finished a project? Or was it because you got to go for a swim? And then the next thing is to talk about, to who did you talk to about it? What, did you just keep it to yourself, or did you make some effort to share that with someone?
I guess that gets us to a point where then we can really take an inventory of our listening deficits and our listening strengths.
Mm.
Yes, because once I'm really learning to listen to my own feelings and identify them throughout the day, then I can do the same thing when someone's talking at a meeting. I can be saying, what feelings am I hearing within that person? What's really going on with that person to be saying what he or she's saying? I can start to listen for feelings going on within others, not just listen for the ideas or the concepts that the person's sharing. Mm-hmm. So it's learning to listen to my own feelings and then learning to listen to the feelings of my son, my daughter, my spouse, my friend, the person who reports to me, my client. Becomes a value. I want to listen in this world to the level of emotion. And then I want to listen to everything. I want to be alert to a sunset and really hear it, let it come into me. I want to listen to a good piece of music, not just have it as background wallpaper. I want to listen to the freshness of a morning. It's becoming alert to reality around me in people, in events, in nature, and becoming a greater listener, more receptive to reality.
Put the brakes on, reduce the noise.
That's right.
Tune in.
Well said.
Well, there we have to leave it. I want to thank the two of you very much.
No, it's been a pleasure, Celeste.
For joining me on the program this afternoon. Maybe we'll do it again in the future.
I hope so.
Love to. And Celeste, I want to thank you for really listening to the book. You listened to it and absorbed it. And that's a great gift to give to us.
My pleasure.
Deeply satisfying.
My pleasure.
Great.
And I mean that.
We hear it and
okay.
Really pleased that you took such delight in the book and in us. We did in you too.
Our guests this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine have been Paul Donahue and Mary Siegel. They are the authors of A Really Listening, Keys to Successful Communication. The book is published by Sorin Books, S-O-R-I-N Books, of Notre Dame, Indiana. You can find this, I'm sure, or have it ordered through your favorite local bookstore, or you can find it online, no doubt, at Amazon. You can also get it through www.sorinbooks.com, S-O-R-I-N books.com. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you much, Celeste, from the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon. I'd like to say she ended quietly, but she managed a pretty good rally this afternoon, which is what most farmers, I suspect, are wanting to hear before the USDA releases its next set of crop production numbers. Those come out at 7:30 tomorrow morning. We'll talk about them and what to expect with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. At 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon, the Secretary of Agriculture had a press briefing at 12:15 today. We listened in on that. We'll have that complete press briefing up on our website. We'll try to put it on our podcast as well so that you can listen to it at home or on your computer and your office if you'd like. We do have a little bit of that. He called in from Geneva, where the WTO negotiations are happening at this hour, to discuss the 60% cut that was proposed by the U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman over the weekend on Sunday in trade distorting subsidies, not only here in the U.S., but across the globe. That's been accepted to some extent by a few of the organizations, American Farm Bureau Federation in particular, backing that proposal. NCDA, the National Corn Growers Association, not so sure. ASA, the American Soybean Association, they're interested but have some more to say about it. We'll learn more about that during the closing market report this afternoon as well. Right now, let's take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade for the day. Futures in the wheat pit had a high of 344 and a half in the December contract, a low at 339 and a half. Settlement price there, $3.42 3/4. They were up 3 cents. The March contract at 358 1/2, high, low at 353 3/4. Settlement price at 357 3/4. They were up 3 3/4 on the day. May futures in the wheat pit, 364 the high, the low at 361 1/2, and a settlement price at 2 1/2 cents higher, 364 the final settlement price for the May wheat. July contract, your harvest month for next year, 371 the high, the low at 367. Settled at 370 3/4. They were up 3 1/2. And the September futures for next year settled at $3.77. They were up 3 3/4 for the day. December corn futures, 204 1/4, the high, the low at 202 1/4. Settlement price, 202 1/2. Up 0.5 cent, dragged that way by the bean pit in the corn pit today. Futures in the March contract, 217 the high, the low at 215 for the March corn. Settled 215 1/2. They were up 3/4. The May contract at 224 3/4, high, low at 223. Settlement price at 223 1/4. They were up 0.25. In July futures, 231 1/2. The high, the low at 229 3/4. Settlement price at 230 1/4, up 0.5 cent. September futures, 238. The high, the low at 236 1/2. Settlement price at 236 1/2. Unchanged on the day. And next year's DEES, that's the red December contract, up 0.25 today. 246 the high, settlement price. The high at 47 and a quarter, the low at $2.45 and 3 quarters. December oats now 167. The high, the low at $1.65 and a half. Settlement price on that low up a half cent, and the March contract settled at $1.72 and a half, up 1 and a quarter. The high there at 73 and 3 quarters. The low at $1.72 and a half for the March oats. From the soy complex, bean futures finished like this: 566 and a half. The high, the low at 558. Settlement price at 563 and a half. They were up 8 at the end of this day. January on the end of Tuesday, 578 and a quarter. The high, the low at 570 and a half. Settlement price at 576 and a half. They were up 8 cents in the March contract, up 7 and 3 quarters. 585 and a half. The high, the low at 578. Settlement price at 583. Once again, they were up 7 and 3 quarters. May futures in the bean pit, 590 and a half. The high, the low at 583 and a half. A settlement price at 588 and a half, up 8 and a half cents. And July futures, 595, the high, the low at 589. Settlement price at 593 and a half, up 8 and a quarter. And the August soybeans, 596 and a half, the high, the low at 593. Settlement price at 593 and a half. They were up 8 and a half cents. By the way, I snuck a quick look at what was happening with LDP, corn LDP for this day at 45 cents in Champaign County. October bean meal, 166.40, the high for the day. Low at 164.30. Settlement price at 165.10. They were up 80. And December futures, 168.90. The high, the low at 167.20. Settlement price at 167.90, up 130. October bean oil, 23.58. The high, the low at 23.21. Settled at 23.40. They were up 33. And the December bean oil futures, 23.85. The high, the low at 23.41. Settlement price at 23.58, up 32. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, here we go. It was a higher day today for feeder cattle, but live cattle, lean hogs, and February bellies finished lower on the day. October feeder cattle, 118.72 and a half, the high 117.75, the low, the settlement 118.70, that up 70. November 117.20, the high 116.10, the low 117, even the settlement, that up 60. January feeder cattle, 114.25, 113.35. The settlement, 114.17 and a half, that up 35. October live cattle, 91 even the high, 90.32 and a half the low. The settlement, 90.77 and a half, that down 2 and a half. December live cattle, 91.65 the high, 90.95 the low. 91.37 and a half the settlement, that down 2 and a half. October lean hog, 68 even the high, 67.55 the low, 67 and a half the settlement, that down 65. December, 64.30 the high, 63.40 the low, the settlement 63.50, that down 102 and a half. February lean hog, 67.10 the high, 66.45 the low, the settlement 66.77 and a half, that down 77 and a half. April lean hog, 66.15 the high, 65.50 the low, the settlement 65.75, that finishing down 80 cents. And February pork bellies, the high today 96.45, the low 90.